Shed no blood, Lachlan said. Break no bones. Stab no heart. The warning is serious. The moment her blade drew blood, it vanished along with the arm wielding it. We should move, Kendra said. Obregon knows our location. This way, Lachlan said. We're going after the coin, Seth whispered. Just in case it remains where I left it, Lachlan said. What are the chances? Seth asked. It's possible, Lachlan said. I was in the quiet box for a very long time, but the metallic people can move quickly only at the end of festival nights. Over an entire year, they move roughly as much as they would at normal speed in a single day. My brothers are free to search every day, and I'm sure they do, but I hid it well. They started up some stairs. Where did you originally find the gold coin? Seth asked. Cunningly hidden inside a tapestry, Lachlan said. The image depicted a dragon with a treasure hoard. The coin was woven into the scene. Touching the coin caused it to detach from the image and materialize. That must have taken a long time to find, Seth said. A very long time, Lachlan said. I found the platinum coin in the crypt. We place coins over the eyes of our dead. The platinum coin covered one of the eyes of my great-grandmother. And you lost the gold one when you grabbed it? Seth asked. The gold coin vanished and became concealed in a new spot, Lachlan said. Whether I hold the coins or my platinum statues carry them in my behalf, it all works the same. They are direct extensions of my will, so together we can only hold one coin. Same for gold or silver. That means we really could help you, Kendra said. If we can each hold our own coin, working together, we could throw in all three. It's worth a try, Lachlan said. Assuming you can hold a coin, and if we can keep you from being transformed. Should we hunt down the dragons? Seth asked. Turn them to platinum? It may not be easy, Lachlan said. Now that they understand they really can't shed blood, break bones, or stop hearts, they'll fight smarter. He raised his gloved hand, flexing his fingers. If they come our way, I'll do my best to transform them. You accidentally touched some people? Seth asked. It happens, Lachlan said. If I were you, I'd stay away from me, especially the side of me with the glove. If you get touched, I can't reverse it. What about our friends who were changed? Kendra asked. It could be permanent, Lachlan said. Only Humbuggle knows the whole story. Seth didn't like the news, but he was far from giving up on Tanu and Nox. Hopefully the dwarf would know a way to undo what happened, or perhaps the power of the Wizenstone could help. Lachlan opened a door to a covered walkway connecting two towers. They were up quite high. Though Seth could see beyond the castle walls, all seemed shrouded in darkness, perhaps because the light globes around the castle were ruining his night vision. "Somebody will probably see us up here," Lachlan said. "Can't be helped." He stepped onto the railing of the walkway and swung up onto the roof. After a moment, Seth heard a crunch, and then Lachlan came down holding a single shingle. "Come on." Seth, Kendra, and Lomo followed Lachlan back indoors. They hurried down some stairs and then along a corridor. "These roof tiles are ceramic," Lachlan said. "Not only do they last a long time, but the spell on the castle seems to preserve their physical structure without maintenance. I learned how to make the roof tiles when I was younger, so I baked the platinum coin into one and swapped it with the tile on the walkway roof in the middle of the night. Stand back!" Seth stepped well away from Lachlan, who raised the ceramic shingle high, then hurled it to the stone floor. The roof tile broke into three pieces. Part of the platinum coin projected from one of the fragments. Lachlan grabbed the fragment with the coin and banged it against the floor until he had the coin free. After wiping the dust off as best he could, he held it up for inspection. Still dusty, the coin featured a bearded dwarf standing on the front, and what looked like the back of the same dwarf on the opposite side.
"Who wants to carry it?"
Lachlan asked.
"Why not you?" Kendra asked.
Lachlan set the coin on the floor and raised both hands.
"I chose to drop out of this contest. That decision stands. I'll help you try to end it, but I'm not looking to win it."
"We've got company,"
Lomo said as Tregane stalked into view. Seth drew his sword as Kendra retrieved the coin from the floor. Lomo took up a position between them and Tregane.
"Lachlan,"
Tregane said, stopping several paces from Lomo.
"You're back in the hunt."
"I want this over,"
Lachlan said, striding past Lomo so he stood closest to his brother.
"At any cost?"
Tregane asked.
"I had the gold coin. Intruders seized it."
"The dragons?"
Lachlan asked. Tregane gave a nod.
"I suspected they might be powerful creatures in human form."
"They could hold it?"
Lachlan asked.
"Aye,"
Tregane said.
"They filched it from my room when I was away."
"You didn't keep it on you?"
Lachlan asked.
"I was hoping to find another,"
Tregane said through gritted teeth.
"And you can't possess two at once,"
Lachlan said.
"I turned one of the dragons to platinum. Only two left. They can't win the contest with two."
Tregane glanced past Lachlan to Lomo, Seth, and Kendra.
"I see three people with you."
"Yes,"
Lachlan said.
"Two mortals and one of the folk."
"The girl has the platinum coin,"
Tregane said.
"I fail to see the problem,"
Lachlan said. A wild look came into Tregane's eyes.
"Don't you? This is slipping away. Whatever happens, we have to keep it in the family, Locke."
"The family hasn't gotten much done for several centuries, Treg,"
Lachlan said.
"And so you would hand the prize over to strangers?"
Tregane asked, spittle flying from his lips.
"No offense, Tregane, but I know I can't trust you,"
Lachlan said.
"At least with a girl there is a chance."
Tregane grabbed at his hair and pulled, raising his voice even more.
"Here I stand, betrayed by my own kin! You would rather dragons take the prize, or children?"
"I want the curse broken," Lachlan said. "We curse ourselves by entering the contest. I want it finished."
"At what cost?"
Tregane blurted.
"The world will pay if the dragons win it, or fools! Turn and help your brother. Let us purify these interlopers into silver and platinum. All platinum if you prefer, or all silver. And then the dragons. Then we can sort out the rest among family."
Lachlan laughed.
"You'll use me, and then you'll do the same as you've always done. Nothing will get sorted out."
Tregane started shouting.
"Now is the time to teach me a lesson! Now is the hour to mistrust your own blood by delivering power to strangers!"
"They know it is the Wizen Stone,"
Lachlan said.
"Is that supposed to comfort me?"
Tregane cried.
"So do the dragons,"
Lachlan said.
"They will keep coming. We must deliver the Wizen Stone to the safest option."
"How is that not the rightful heir?"
Tregane asked.
"Because you care only about yourself,"
Lachlan said.
"Heath, too. We could have obtained the Wizen Stone long ago had we worked together."
"You care about nothing,"
Tregane spat, waving an arm.
"You're an anarchist! You prefer strangers over family!"
"I prefer sanity over madness," Lachlan said.
Growling, Tregane charged forward, and Lachlan wrapped both arms around him, tackling him to the ground. Grunting and straining, they wrestled until Tregane ended up on top, holding Lachlan down.
"Shall I help?" Lomo offered.
"Avoid his glove," Lachlan said, "and mine. Hold him still and I can remove it."
"You would strip me of what is rightfully mine!"
Tregane bellowed.
"It's a contest," Lachlan said.
As Lomo moved to get behind Tregane, the angry prince pushed away from Lachlan and returned to his feet. Rather than attack Lomo, he backed away. Lachlan stood, positioning himself in front of Lomo.
"Look at you," Tregane said derisively. "So smug. We'll see how satisfied you are when the world falls to ruins."
After a final disgusted look at his brother, he turned and fled.
"And I thought my family didn't get along," Seth said.
Lachlan gave a rueful chuckle.
"Neither of my brothers listens to reason. They are both so intent on claiming the prize for themselves that they are willing to keep the possibility of winning it forever out of reach."
"That is about to change,"
spoke a clear, authoritative voice. Seth whirled. From the other end of the walkway, a man approached. He had regal features with steel-gray hair and a closely trimmed beard, and he wore a chainmail shirt that hung well past his waist and heavy trousers. Seth knew the voice, but usually it sounded like many voices speaking in unison and was magnified. In this form, Celebrant sounded human. Behind him came Obregon, no longer holding his golden axe. Seth noticed that neither man had a visible weapon, but Celebrant wore a golden glove on one hand.
"That's close enough,"
Lomo said. Celebrant and Obregon halted.
"Very well. We overheard enough to grasp the situation. You have the platinum coin."
"Maybe we were bluffing," Seth said.
"We possess the other two,"
Celebrant said.
"Gold and silver."
"Along with Heath's glove," Lachlan said.
"My glove now,"
Celebrant replied, spreading his gloved fingers wide.
"A fairly remarkable item. Please thank Tregane for the uproarious conversation. It simplified the matter of locating you."
"Heath?" Lachlan asked.
"As golden as his former minions," Celebrant said. "We partnered with him at first. After we acquired the gold coin from Tregane, our relationship with Heath soured."
"You pinned him down and took the glove?" Kendra asked.
"We did,"
Celebrant said.
"I started turning gold when I removed it, but putting it on reversed the process. Everything is so tedious in these pathetic human bodies, but using the glove is amusing."
He touched the railing of the walkway and smiled as a portion of it turned to gold. Seth and Kendra shared a glance. He suspected she was thinking along the same lines as he was. They should be able to save their cousin by putting a glove on him. Maybe Lachlan would lend them his? Could they save Tanu that way too? Would it work on a fully transformed person?
"Heath was liberal with his glove," Lachlan said.
"I observed,"
Celebrant replied.
"His entire room was gilded. Every item, every block, every tile. Now he matches."
"What is your offer?" Kendra asked.
"Isn't it obvious?"
Celebrant asked.
"We lost Jaleesa. To move forward, we need one more person to hold a coin. I could wait for more dragons to come 3 months from now on the next festival night, but I would rather settle this now." wouldn't you?
You want to throw the coins in the fountain together? Seth asked.
Naturally,
Celebrant said.
Keep things progressing.
What about the prize? Kendra asked. Celebrant shrugged.
May the best treasure hunter win.
Can we have a minute to talk about this in privacy? Kendra asked.
I fail to see the need,
Celebrant said.
You will not succeed in taking the coins from us, but I could turn you to gold in short order.
Or we could turn you to platinum, Seth replied.
Or I could seal the platinum glove,
Celebrant countered.
Instead, I offer a full truce until we toss in the coins. If the Wizen Stone materializes, we will all do our best to get it. Or if there are more steps to win the prize, we will take them as they come.
If we wish to move the contest forward, it's a reasonable offer, Lomo said. We don't want to wait for more dragons, Seth said. All right, Kendra said. Truce. Celebrant turned away briskly.
Shall we then? The night is not getting any younger.
He and Obregon started walking. Seth, Kendra, Lomo, and Lachlan followed. I expected to see you in heavy armor, Seth called ahead.
You expected correctly,
Celebrant replied without looking back.
Cumbersome armor did not match the circumstances. I don't require protection from blows, and it was slowing me down.
And normally a dragon in human form has magically reinforced strength, Lachlan murmured. Without inhuman strength and endurance, a full suit of armor quickly becomes ponderous. As they descended toward the courtyard, Seth tried to devise a strategy. How could they gain advantage in this situation? Dealing with the dragons probably made sense for now, but what would stop them from turning everyone to gold once the coins had been thrown? Or what if the Wizen Stone appeared? Would it just be a matter of who was first to pick it up? No matter what, they could not let it fall into Celebrant's hands. Was there a realistic way to stop him? Seth moved over to Lomo. We'll have to be ready for anything, Seth muttered quietly. Lomo gave a nod. A lot is riding on the next few moments. They exited to the courtyard and crossed to the fountain. Water splashed from 7 spouts across multiple shelves into the wide basin. Celebrant produced the gold coin, and Obregon held up the silver. Give us the silver coin, Kendra said.
That was not the arrangement I offered,
Celebrant said. You need help putting the coins in the fountain. Give us the silver, Kendra said. We throw 2, you throw 1.
I'll have help in 3 months,
Celebrant said.
I can wait.
Are you sure you'll have help? Kendra asked. I can't imagine you trusting many dragons with this information.
Not many,
Celebrant replied, his gaze hard.
Is it easier to imagine me without contingency plans?
Seth thought Celebrant looked like he was telling the truth. He could just be a good bluffer. Who cares who throws the coins? Kendra said. It saves you 3 months at least. Let us throw 2.
I care,
Celebrant said.
I offered a truce under the condition that you would throw your coin with us. Would you prefer to break the truce?
Seth knew Kendra had moved onto shaky ground. Trouble could start any second. Kendra took the platinum coin from her pocket. I'll play along. Lachlan stepped near to Seth and whispered, If this goes bad, run and hide. Seth got ready. He would run either to the Wizen Stone or away from Celebrant if he started trying to tag them with his glove.
I will count 3, 2-1, toss,
Celebrant said.
Ready?
Yes, Kendra said.
3,
Celebrant said. Seth clenched his fists and bent his knees slightly. A quick reaction could be the key to grabbing the wizened stone.
2,
Celebrant said. Seth glanced at Lomo, who stood ready as well.
1,
Celebrant said.
Toss.
3 arms swung forward, and 3 coins took flight, each plopping into the basin. Chapter 29. Banishment. Water stopped spouting into the fountain, and the liquid in the wide circular basin grew dark and still. Surprisingly dark, and suddenly still as glass. Kendra had positioned herself a quarter of the way around the fountain from Celebrant. Leaning over the water, she could see her reflection. She also saw the reflection of a dwarf. He looked to be in his autumn years, with playfully expressive features and a forked beard, reddish-brown, streaked with gray. The compact man waved at her with just his fingers and spoke.
Hello.
Kendra looked sideways to where he must be standing. After a moment looking around, she realized he was visible only in the water.
This is a surprise,
the dwarf said, looking from Kendra to Celebrant to Obregon.
None of you three were present at the start of the contest.
Are you Humbuggle? Kendra asked. Looking bewildered, the dwarf patted his vest as if feeling his pockets.
I'm afraid so, and I should have a poem ready for the next phase of the challenge, but I have waited a very long time. You wouldn't believe how long. Some people just can't seem to collaborate.
What is the next phase?
Celebrant asked. The dwarf wagged a finger at him.
This contestant is all business, accustomed to command. You're a participant like everyone else tonight.
Celebrant sneered.
You have a poem?
I had a poem, Humbuggle said. A good one. And that is no small matter in English. But I've misplaced it.
Don't you have it memorized?
Celebrant asked.
I did last time I checked, Humbuggle said. But that was more than 600 years ago.
Can you just tell us the rules? Kendra said.
I suppose, Humbuggle said. I could also eat plain oatmeal every day to stay alive. An explanation is more pleasant when it rhymes, and a tad more official.
Make up a rhyme? Kendra proposed.
I'm not speaking Sylvian, Humbuggle said. This is English. I suppose I can give it a go.
He laced his fingers, cracked his knuckles, cleared his throat, and recited,
To tread where mystic waters roll, you must be one who paid the toll. Reclaim the token you have tossed, or lose all hope to pay the cost. Then in the end, if you reflect, the rod you surely shall detect. With power to banish friend or foe, to realms above or depths below.
We're looking for a rod? Kendra asked.
No more hints, young lady, Humbuggle said. That poem was already far too plain.
The dwarf clapped his hands and vanished. Immediately the floor of the basin began to recede, sinking deeper and deeper, leaving behind one step at a time, until a helix of stairs descended into darkness. As the water in the basin flowed down the newly forming stairway, the spouts began to gush again, keeping a steady stream of water tumbling down into the humid depths. Celebrant glared at Kendra, pointing at her with his gloved hand.
If you want to survive this night, do not follow us.
Celebrant entered the basin at the top step and began going down the stairway.
Obregon followed. The footing looked treacherous, with water swirling around their shins, but they sloshed out of sight without falling. Kendra turned to the others.
I have to go, don't I?
Let me go first,
Lomo said, trying to step into the basin and getting thrust back roughly as an unseen barrier flashed.
The poem warned that only those who threw coins could go down,
Lachlan said.
It's me or nobody, Kendra said. We can't let them get the rod. What if that means they will win the Wizenstone?
Don't go without this, Lachlan said,
removing his platinum glove. He set it on the ground and stepped away.
Your glove? Kendra asked.
If you're wearing it, Celebrant can't turn you to gold, Lachlan said. All our hopes are on you right now. Take it.
Kendra crouched, picked up the glove, and put it on. Though it looked too big at first, the glove shrank to neatly fit her hand.
Be careful what you touch with the glove,
Lachlan reminded her.
It can take time to get used to the consequences of wearing it. Your own clothes are safe, though.
I can control the platinum statues? Kendra asked.
It's easiest to instruct them if you're touching them,
Lachlan said.
But you can also send out commands mentally. I just have them trying to touch Obregon at the moment, since the glove makes Celebrant immune.
I don't see them, Seth said.
They're coming,
Lachlan replied. Kendra looked at the other statues in the courtyard. All were gradually moving toward them, so slowly that the motion was only just becoming noticeable from a distance.
They're speeding up.
By the end of the night, they will be dangerous, Lachlan said.
I better hurry,
Kendra said, stepping over the side of the basin onto the top stair.
Celebrant could try to take your glove, Lachlan said. Don't let them corner you. Touch Obregon if necessary.
Be sneaky, Seth recommended. They don't need to know you're behind them.
Water splashed around her ankles, soaking her socks. The top step was not as wet as the others. Water from only one spout of the fountain drained onto it. As she made her first full downward circle, all the spouts would contribute to the cascade. Kendra stared at the water slurping downward. Was she crazy? If she slipped, the fall itself could be lethal, let alone the pair of dragons in human form who wanted to turn her to gold, and probably a bunch of traps created by the dwarf.
Wish me luck, Kendra said.
You can do it, Seth assured her. See you soon.
Kendra looked at her brother.
I don't have my fairy kind powers. It looks so dark.
You should get going, Lomo said. You don't want Celebrant and Obregon to get too far ahead.
Hopefully you'll stumble across their dead bodies, Seth said.
A girl can dream, Kendra replied, starting down the stairs. She kept a hand on the wall to help steady herself. The water gushing over the stone steps made the descent quite slippery. After a full downward circle, her friends passed out of view, and the darkness increased. The misty air smelled of moss, stone, and water. The darkness increased the deeper she went, and the wall became mushy or slimy sometimes. The squishy textures made Kendra squeamish, but she was more scared of falling, so she kept her hand sliding across the unsettling surface. Soon Kendra was descending in complete darkness, unseen water sluicing past her calves. She firmly planted each step before taking the next, winding down to unguessable depths. The water rushing ahead of her and behind her filled the stairway with white noise. The stone wall grew cooler, alternating between gooey, mossy, and slick. After some time, faint blue radiance appeared up ahead. The light grew brighter as Kendra kept going. She found a glowing crystal anchored to the wall just beyond where the spiraling stairs finally ended in a pool. At the bottom of the pool, Kendra noticed the glint of a coin. Wading into the pool brought the water just above her knees, but her pants were already drenched anyway from water splashing up while she descended the stairs. Kendra crouched and fished out the platinum coin. The poem had made it sound like she might need it, so she tucked it in her pocket. Perhaps the light source had been placed here to give her a fair chance to find it. Water overflowing from the pool at the base of the stairs continued down a gently slanted corridor. Some distance down the hall, Kendra saw the blue radiance of another crystal. There was no sign of either Celebrant or Obregon. A hurried search of the pool revealed no more coins, so Kendra assumed they must have collected theirs. Had they missed hers, or had they been unable to claim it? Perhaps the rule of one coin per person remained in effect. The corridor looked ancient, the eroding masonry glossy with dampness and slime. The hall was wider than the stairway had been, meaning the water was not as deep, but it still covered her ankles. Kendra crept forward, wondering how she would respond if Celebrant and Obregon attacked her. The corridor ran long and straight, with blue crystals placed far enough apart to allow for extended, shadowy stretches between them, although light ahead or behind never fully passed out of view. At length, Kendra reached a place where the water flowed down a short flight of stairs into a black river. Kendra paused at the top of those stairs. She could not see the far side of the river, but the water was clearly flowing left to right, with the water from the fountain serving only as a small tributary. Unlike the water on the stairs, the water of the river seemed black as ink, and only barely reflected the light from the nearest crystal. Beyond the bottom of the stairs, a few steps led up to a wooden quay projecting a short distance out into the river. A single raft awaited at the end of the quay, with a single cowled occupant who stood facing away from Kendra. Nothing about what she saw enticed her to approach, but there was nowhere else to go unless she simply dove into the tenebrous water of the river or turned back. Could the occupant of the raft be Celebrant or Obregon? Perhaps, if they had found a hooded robe. If not, where were they? Had there been other options earlier? Kendra descended the last stairs, water sloshing around her, then waded over and climbed the steps to the quay. The rotted wood looked thin and splintery, with so many gaps it would be more like walking on shutters than on a solid surface. The wood crunched beneath her first step, and she even felt it sag slightly. If she broke through, she would end up in the Black River. The sides of the quay seemed better reinforced than the center, so she moved along the right side, wood creaking with each step. At the end of the quay, she reached the raft. The robed figure turned, revealing a skull inside the hood. Kendra gasped and tried not to stumble into the river. At least the skeletal figure made no harsh movements. A hand made of bones reached out, fleshless palm upward. The figure held that pose. Kendra pulled the coin from her pocket and placed it in the skeleton's hand. The fingers closed and the figure stepped back, allowing Kendra access to the raft. Though wooden like the quay, the raft looked much sturdier. Kendra stepped aboard. The robed skeleton gripped a pole leaning against the quay and pushed off. Slowly rotating, the raft drifted out onto the mysterious water. A jumbled mixture of faint whispers and sighs arose from the dark liquid, prompting Kendra to move to the center of the raft. Though the skeleton dipped his pole into the water, Kendra did not think it looked like the pole was reaching the ground and pushing off, and the skeleton did not appear to put much real effort into the motion. Nevertheless, the raft traveled against the current at a slow, steady rate. The sound of the water splashing down the stairs to join the river gradually faded, leaving Kendra alone with the tangled susurrations of the Black River. As the darkness increased to impenetrable perfection, Kendra desperately missed her ability to see without light. What if the skeleton had set down the pole and was coming toward her, fleshless hands reaching? She would have no warning before those bony fingers closed around her neck. Kendra tried not to fixate on the whispering water, but it was the only sound besides the gentle sloshing of the pole. She was glad that she could not make out individual words. The collective feel was unsavory. A spectral light became visible up ahead, on the opposite side of the river from where she had embarked. They were still traveling upstream. In the ghostly light, Kendra saw two other rafts drawn up against a stone jetty. A skeletal boatman stood on each. She assumed this meant the dragons in human form had come this way ahead of her, but they were not within view. The raft glided to a stop against the jetty. Kendra stepped off the raft and glanced back at the skeleton, who seemed indifferent to her. She walked across the jetty to the shore before looking back at the three rafts, wondering if the coin provided a round-trip journey, or if she might have to find another way to pay in order to return. A path led from the jetty to an archway. Kendra could not discern where the light was originating. It seemed to somehow distill out of the air without a source, which perhaps was what made it feel ghostly. The shore beside the dark river extended only a short distance in either direction. To follow the river would force her either to swim or to climb rock walls. The archway seemed the obvious destination. She left the path and approached the archway from the side, hoping to take Celebrant and Obregon by surprise. Treading carefully, she peeked around the corner and saw a large rectangular room. If the room was 20 yards wide, it must have been 60 yards long. Similar to outside by the river, the light in the room had no observable source. At the far end of the chamber, a smooth wooden rod stirred vertically atop a tall pedestal. A rectangular reflecting pool filled most of the room, with aisles down the sides granting access to the far end. On the left side of the pool, Celebrant strode purposefully toward the pedestal across the room. On the right side, Obregon hurried toward the same destination. Mysteriously, no matter how many steps they took, neither man seemed to make any progress. Kendra crept into the room. If Celebrant or Obregon looked back, they would easily see her. The room was not very large, and both of them were only a third of the way toward the far end. Kendra crossed to the center of the base of the reflecting pool, directly opposite the rod, which was mirrored clearly in the still water. She heard forlorn whispers and sighs emanating from the dark pool, just like in the river. It was impossible to guess how deep the water might be. Moving carefully, Kendra snuck over to the side of the pool behind Obregon. He was only about 15 paces down the aisle from her, still walking briskly without advancing. If she could creep up behind him and turn him to platinum, that might even the odds quite a bit. Her first step toward Obregon caused her to pause. With that step, the entire room seemed to elongate. The far end of the reflecting pool looked almost twice as far away, and it would now take more than 20 paces to reach Obregon. Kendra took a couple more steps and watched the room telescope even more. Obregon had to be 30 or maybe even 40 paces away now, and the far end of the room was getting truly distant. Kendra walked forward more, watching as the room continued to elongate until Obregon was barely in view and the rod was out of sight. The reflecting pool seemed to stretch ahead forever. Looking back, Kendra found that the start of the reflecting pool looked much more distant than the number of steps she had taken. Walking back in the direction she had come,
Kendra found that her progress was as slow as it looked like it should be. Evidently, her return steps neither stretched nor shrank the room, but steps toward the far side quickly increased the journey. Kendra paused, considering her predicament. Celebrant and Obregon had a huge head start. No wonder they didn't see her. They had probably gone so far that the near end of the room was long out of view from their present perspective. They had also gone so far that they probably had an impossible lead. Curious, Kendra jogged back to the front of the room. The ground she had covered in about 20 paces now required a 5-minute jog. When Kendra got back to the near end of the pool, she found the room had returned to its original shape. Obregon once again looked perhaps 15 paces away and was still only a third of the way to the far end. The farther Celebrant and Obregon went, the longer the room became for them. When Kendra followed, the room stretched for her as well. Was there a better way? Or was the dwarf requiring an epic journey that appeared short at the outset? Kendra wondered whether Celebrant and Obregon understood how slowly they were progressing. Once both ends of the pool were beyond sight, it was probably difficult to perceive how much ground they had covered and how much remained. If her current vantage of their infinitesimal progress was accurate, it looked like Celebrant and Obregon would be traveling for a very long time. Studying the room, Kendra wondered if there might be a shortcut. The rod looked tantalizingly close. Besides walking alongside the reflecting pool, the only other obvious option was attempting to swim. If the room didn't stretch when she was in the water, it would be a relatively short distance to cover. If it did elongate, she might, without going very far, get stranded and drown. Or maybe she could always swim sideways and get out. Perhaps only the length of the room would increase, not the width. Kendra crouched at the edge of the water. The faint, overlapping whispers made the liquid seem sinister. She had a bad feeling about getting in. Was it just cowardice? She was no longer trying to find Risen May. Her instincts were probably there for a reason. Jumping into that water might be the end of her. It was frustrating. It looked like she could walk to the rod in less than a minute, but as soon as she started to approach, she knew it would stretch out of reach again. How could it be so near and so far? Squatting low like this, at the edge of the water, it almost looked like she could reach out and touch the reflection of the rod. As she considered the reflection, something about the perspective seemed off. Shouldn't the reflected rod be a little farther away? After she dropped her head even lower, the reflection appeared reachable. Part of the poem came back to her. In the end, if you reflect, the rod you will detect. That wasn't exactly right, but it was close. Could it be so simple? There was no way. Her idea was absurd. Kendra did not want to touch the whispery water to test her theory. What if it gave cooties to her soul? But the reflection seemed nearer than it should be, and the way to the rod was so far and difficult, and the dwarf seemed to like tricks. Keeping her head low, Kendra reached out into the pool and grabbed the reflection of the rod. Feeling tangible wood in her grasp, she removed it from the pool. And the rod at the far end of the pool was no longer there. Chapter 30. Forgotten.
"You made that one look easy," Humbuggle said from off to one side.
Kendra jumped, nearly dropping the staff, and turned to face the dwarf.
"Where did you come from?"
"I'm never far," Humbuggle said. "What's the fun of a contest unless you watch the competition?"
"You made this contest?" Kendra asked. He gave a little bow.
"Guilty as charged."
"Why?" Kendra asked. He looked at her as if puzzled.
"My dear girl, Everything in this life is a contest. Finding food, shelter, the basic necessities, endeavoring to thrive, winning the positions and prestige you desire, acquiring your needs and wants, pleasing friends and besting enemies. At least my contest is fair.
What's fair about everyone getting turned to gold or silver? Kendra asked.
Most contests get won by the strongest, or the fastest, or the wisest,
Humbuggle said.
I get tired of the biggest sword, or the sharpest fangs prevailing in every fight. Who wants the most powerful wizard to always take the spoils? I created a space without magic, a competition where the best fighter won't necessarily win. Other virtues are just as important here, like cooperation and cleverness and courage and sacrifice. The biggest prize I know of is on the line, and anyone has a chance to win.
Not everyone had the same advantage, Kendra said. Seems like the no magic condition doesn't apply to you, and the three brothers had the gloves and got to hear the rules.
The contest was originally designed for them, Humbuggle said. The gloves were indeed an advantage, and yet those three remained stuck on the first phase of the trial for centuries. I'm flattered when my challenges are difficult, but even I was getting a touch impatient. As for the rules, everyone gets to hear them.
We didn't get to hear, Kendra said. We had to talk to, she didn't want to tell him about Augie. Humbuggle jumped and spun. When he landed, he looked exactly like Augie.
I gave you the first poem, didn't I?
He sounded just like Augie, too.
That was you?
Kendra exclaimed. Augie leaped and spun. When he landed again, he was a thin old woman.
The dragons met me. I went by the name of Eloise and told them the basics and the poem.
The old woman jumped and twirled, becoming Humbuggle again.
Everyone got a fair chance.
You're sneaky, Kendra said.
Young one, you have no idea,
Humbuggle replied. Kendra looked to Celebrant and Obregon. They were still moving away from her, still about a third of the way to the far end of the pool. They may not be able to see that the rod is missing for a long time.
It would already be a long way back for them indeed,
Humbuggle said.
However, the banishment rod is what powers this room. Once the rod leaves the room, this chamber will begin to collapse to its actual dimensions for everyone still inside.
How long would it have taken them to make it to the rod the way they are going? Kendra asked.
At their present speed?
Humbuggle asked.
More than 8,000 years. And there is nothing to eat on the way.
How long would it take them to get back if I were to leave the rod here? Kendra asked, wondering if she could buy time to solve the next challenge, then return for the rod later. Humbuggle gave her a sly grin.
That I cannot reveal, as it could give you an advantage. I will share that you cannot move to the next phase of the contest unless you take the rod with you.
What does the rod do? Kendra asked.
I'm willing to explain,
Humbuggle said.
The banishment rod can send a single target extremely far away. It is rigged to do so only once. Take care how you use it. I do not believe the contest can be won without it. To keep the game fair, I will confess that the Wizen Stone is jealously guarded by a powerful demon. Any who seek to claim the stone would have to ward off the demon before long.
How do I use the rod? Kendra asked.
Simple,
Humbuggle said.
Just extend the rod toward the target and cry, "Be gone!"
And the target will be sent away, Kendra said.
Use it carefully, Humbuggle said. The rod will work only once for a single contestant. Are you ready to go?
Sure, Kendra said. Humbuggle clapped his hands, and a secret door opened in the wall. Kendra saw stairs beyond. the others will be able to follow me?" she asked.
"In due time," Humbuggle replied. "As I said, once you leave with the rod, the room will start to return to normal."
"Can you give me any hints?" Kendra asked.
"Once you reach the top, I can bestow the next poem," Humbuggle said. "Off you go!"
After a final glance at Celebrant and Obregon still running without progress toward the far side of the room, Kendra went out the doorway and started up the stairs. To her relief, they were well lit and completely dry. Seth backed away from a trio of silver statues who were getting near. It was easy to see them moving now, but they were still quite slow. Enough statues had converged on the courtyard that he, Lachlan, and Lomo needed to stay alert.
"Behind you, Lachlan," Seth said.
The prince glanced over his shoulder and moved a few paces sideways.
"I haven't been vulnerable since this game began. Tregain chose first and got the silver glove. Heath chose next, and it turned out to be gold. Platinum fell to me. All the gloves looked the same at the start."
"It's getting hard to stay near the fountain," Lomo said. "They might be slow, but the numbers keep increasing."
Seth estimated there were 60 gold statues in the courtyard now, and maybe 50 silver ones. More were gradually emerging from the castle.
"Don't let them form a ring around you," Lachlan said. "And don't forget that they keep moving faster, unless, of course, you want to end the suspense and rest. Getting turned to gold might serve just as well as the quiet box."
"Don't talk like that," Seth said. "We have to keep the Wizenstone away from the dragons. It's going to be tough. We need all the help we can get."
"Seth is right," Lomo said. "You could make a big difference."
"I'll try," Lachlan said. "At least the challenge is moving forward. I had lost hope that the day would come when the three coins would enter the fountain together."
"Guys!" Kendra called, emerging from the castle, holding a rod slightly taller than her.
"I got the banishment rod!"
"Where'd you come from?"
Seth called, running toward her with Lachlan and Lomo, leaving the fountain and the majority of the statues behind.
"I came up a different stairway," Kendra said. "It led to a secret door in the throne room."
"What comes next?"
Seth wondered.
"So glad you asked,"
Humbuggle said, appearing between Kendra and the three males.
"I have a poem that might shed some light on the next phase."
"Let's hear it," Kendra said. "The dragons may not be far behind."
"To reach the storied stone of yore, you shortly must unlock a door. Those who dare may seek the key without the aid of memory. Plant the staff where five halls join. All can proceed without a coin. Those who advance may soon regret the many things they will forget."
"Happy hunting," Humbuggle said, jumping with a clap and disappearing before his feet returned to the ground.
"We have to hurry," Kendra said. "The dragons are coming."
"Follow me," Lachlan said. "There is only one place in the castle where five halls join."
Seth raced behind Lachlan through a door into the castle. As they ran, Kendra explained about the banishment rod and the demon that would try to reclaim the Wizenstone after someone took possession of it. When they found statues in a hall, they ran by them, but not casually. Seth knew a single touch would turn him to silver or gold, and, though still slow, the statues were gradually picking up their pace.
"How many things do you think we have to collect?" Seth asked.
"What do you mean?" Kendra replied. "First coins, then the rod, now a key?" Seth said.
"Sounds like the stone is behind a locked door," Kendra said. "Maybe the key is the last item."
Lachlan stopped when they reached a small atrium on a high level of the castle, the ceiling open to the sky. Five corridors intersected around a curved area of soil where several shrubs were growing. In the center of the shrubs was a flagpole supporting a blue flag emblazoned with a white lion.
"Here we are," Lachlan said.
Seth checked down the branching hallways, but saw no statues yet.
Where do we plant the staff?
Maybe in place of the flag, Lomo suggested. See if it fits.
Lachlan removed the flagpole, and Kendra plunged the banishment rod into the vacant socket. With a gentle rumble, a section of a wall slid aside, revealing a black door.
Good guess, Kendra told Lomo. What now?
Lachlan asked.
I can go in, Kendra offered.
Seth looked at the black door. Kendra had already risked her life once. It was time for him to step up.
No, it's my turn. I'm the youngest. I have the fewest memories to lose.
We all want our memories, Kendra said.
I've got this one, Seth said. With or without memories, I have great instincts.
We could all try it, Lomo suggested. The poems set no limit.
But we can't all lose our memories, Seth argued. Somebody has to stay out here in case those who go in forget what is going on.
Good point, Kendra said.
Let me go, Seth said. Once I'm inside, replace the flagpole and take the staff someplace else. Maybe that will keep the dragons from catching up and following me.
Sound plan, Lomo said. I'll go with Seth. Lachlan, can you protect Kendra?
I'll try, Lachlan said.
The noisy splash of a gong reverberated from elsewhere in the castle. Seth looked at Kendra with wide eyes.
Somebody new has arrived, Lachlan said. This is quite a night. Nobody in decades, and suddenly the arrivals keep coming.
Sounds like just one, Seth said, as the shimmering of the gong faded.
We should hurry, Lomo said. We may have even more company soon.
Could it be a friend? Seth asked.
I doubt it, Kendra said. I don't know of anybody else on our side who knew about this. Maybe another dragon. Emergency backup.
Lomo patted Seth's shoulder and trotted toward the door. Seth followed.
Be careful, Seth, Kendra said. I'll try to remember that, Seth replied with a smile. Hopefully, when I get the key, I'll still know to bring it back here.
Maybe you won't forget too much, Kendra said.
Does it seem like that kind of castle? Seth asked.
Lomo opened the door, but nothing was visible beyond the threshold. The light from the atrium could not penetrate the darkness.
Not comforting, Seth said.
In we go,
Lomo replied, stepping forward and vanishing into the blackness. Embarrassed that he had let Lomo go first, Seth quickly followed. A slight tingle sparkled across his body as he stepped through the veil of blackness. On the far side, he found himself in a fairly large room illuminated by glowing globes. A black rectangle in the wall marked where he had come from, though strangely Seth could not recall what lay on the other side. An enormous pair of bronze doors was centered in the opposite wall, each embossed with a large, bearded face. Two men already stood in the room. A handsome man with a dark complexion and an artistically sculpted goatee glanced back at Seth from only a couple of paces away. A wiry, older man, shirtless with protruding ribs, waited over by the bronze doors. He faced Seth and the goateed stranger with excitement.
"Tell me what you remember,"
the man asked.
"Why did you come here?"
Seth opened his mouth to answer, before realizing that he wasn't sure. He glanced at the man with the goatee, who was scowling in thought.
"I have no idea," the goateed man said.
"Me neither," Seth replied.
"You came in together,"
the old man prompted.
"Seconds apart. Any memory of one another?"
Seth studied the man with the goatee. Nothing about him seemed remotely familiar.
"Should I know you?" the man asked.
"I don't think we've met," Seth said.
"I'm Lomo," the man said, "of the Fair Folk."
"Seth Sorensen," Seth said, "of the Sorensens."
"And I'm Pietro," the old man said. "I'm also unsure why I'm here."
"You are here to compete for the trophy,"
the face in the left door thundered.
"We will await any other participants and begin momentarily,"
the face in the other door said.
"I'm here for a trophy?" Seth asked.
The idea didn't